join the court. So, Mr. Gross, good morning to you. You may approach and you may proceed.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Steve Gross, and I'm appearing this morning on behalf of the petitioners, a group of small businesses here in Nebraska who provide indoor tanning services. Your Honors, despite the repeated pleas of the petitioners, the unauthorized collection of an admissions tax from the petitioners was not halted by the department for nearly 2 years after it was brought to their attention and after great damage was done to their businesses. Now, the only recourse under Nebraska law in this situation is for them to seek a refund, and that is why we're here this morning. The key question really before this court comes down to whether the petitioners have standing to seek a refund under the Nebraska Revenue Act. Now, there are two ways to approach this question, and I will first address it as a matter of statutory interpretation, which is the first issue that we must reach, and then I will address it under the legal incidence analysis. Standing to assert a claim for a tax refund, of course, is statutory. So what does the statute say? Plain terms of the refund statute grant standing not to the purchasers, as the Department of Revenue claims over and over, but rather to the ones, the persons who made the payment. Now, the term purchaser is a defined term in the statute, and it's used in other sections of the Revenue Act to denote who may seek a refund of particular taxes. But the word purchaser is not used in this section of statute that is at issue today.
Well, suppose the tanning salon got a refund of the taxes they paid. Are they entitled to keep it?
Yes, and that question, Your Honor, was addressed. It's been addressed by at least two state Supreme Courts, the Supreme Court of Missouri and the Tennessee Supreme Court. In both instances, they have concluded that the purchaser's remedy in that situation is against the business. And the Tennessee Supreme Court in particular said that they have the same remedy that any other consumer has when they have a billing dispute with a company. Their claim would be against the business. It's really kind of, it's similar to the concept of privity. There is no legal relationship or legal obligation running between the purchaser and the Department of Revenue. It only runs between the retailer and the Department of Revenue.
Would the purchasers still have a claim against the state if the state gave the money back to your clients?
That really gets into the question of where the incidence of the tax lies, Your Honor. And I will get into this in great detail, but the incidence of the tax lies on the business, not on the consumer. And so they would, under our statute, they would have claim against the business, not against the Department of Revenue. And to go further on that, the distinction that's in the Revenue Act as to when refunds may be sought by purchasers as opposed to the persons who made the overpayment or payment in this question, I think is revealing. Where standing is granted to seek a refund under the Act to purchasers, it's when the purchasers have the legal obligation to pay that tax. And there are three instances where that's the case. In contrast, when standing is granted to the person who made the payment, it's in situations where the responsibility for the tax is on the business. Now, the department insists that the petitioners in this case are tax collectors and not taxpayers. However, simply repeating that doesn't make it so. We need to look at the statute.
Did you get compensated for collecting the taxes?
Yes, Your Honor. There is, and I think that's an important point to make. There is a provision in the statute that says the person who does the work of collecting the tax gets to keep a small portion of it. But what's interesting about that statute, Your Honor, is that it refers to the person who performs that function as the taxpayer. And that's exactly the point that I'm reaching here. The Revenue Act, Section 772708, refers to businesses such as the petitioners as the taxpayers, not once, but four times in the statute. In fact, the department's own form that's submitted to them when this tax is paid refers to the businesses as the taxpayers. The department acknowledges, as they must, that the taxpayer may seek a refund. Now, and let me get further into, I think, to answer your question.
I beg your pardon. Yes. So are your clients going by a number of names? Are they, you know, we've covered taxpayers, consumers, purchasers, payors, and so forth. How many names within the statute would you think are applicable
The statute uses the term retailer and taxpayer interchangeably.
Okay.
In a different section of the same statute, it refers to purchaser.
And of all the words that are in there, which ones would apply to your clients in this
retailer case? Retailer and taxpayer.
Retailer and taxpayer. Thank you.
As this matter could be decided as purely as a matter of statutory construction, but the result is the same if you look at the concept of legal incidents.
Well, what did we say in the Knights of Exarban case? Hasn't this issue already been decided?
Well, let's go ahead and get to that. Your Honors, I want to, first of all, I guess, if I may, refer to what the leading treatise on state taxation says about this matter, and then compare it to what this court said in the Exarban decision. And I think logically, I need to take it in that order. The leading treatise on state tax law is Hellerstein on state taxation, and I wanted to quote from section 17.08 of that treatise. This is new material, and it supports the analysis in our brief. I think it goes directly to your question. The legal incidence of a tax is often difficult to determine in light of ambiguous statutory provisions that place tax-related obligations on both the purchaser and the seller. State court decisions generally follow the same line of analysis articulated by the United States Supreme Court. That is, legal incidence of the tax falls on the entity who has the legal obligation to pay it, even if the entity has passed on the economic burden of the tax to others. And that's exactly the situation with our statute here in Nebraska.
No, but
so how does that square with
Exarban? Didn't we interpret this requirement that it was the purchaser who was the party entitled to collect the reimbursement?
Precisely, Your Honor. So the next question is, how does the majority view as referenced in the leading treatise on state taxation square with this decision from 1984, the Exarban decision?
I think you're saying we were wrong.
Absolutely, Your Honor. It simply does not square. Quite simply, the statements made in the Exarban case about the incidence of the admissions tax.
So you want us to overrule Exarban?
Well, I don't know that you need to, Your Honor, because you've already decided the Anthony case just 2 years ago in 2012. And the test set forth by this court in the Anthony case is the correct test. All we are asking is that you apply that test. The statements made in the Exarban...
Wouldn't it be clearer if we just overruled Exarban?
Or to the extent Exarban is inconsistent and say something like that for you?
Yes. The Exarban case, I guess just to cut to the point, the Exarban case is inconsistent with the majority view in this area. It's inconsistent with this court's test set forth in Anthony just 2 years ago. And as we set forth in our brief, if you apply the Anthony test to the facts in the Exarban case, you reach the exact opposite conclusion. I'd like to reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal.
You may. Mr. Bartel, good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chief Justice. May it please the Court, Jay Bartel, Assistant Attorney General, on behalf of the Department of Revenue and the Tax Commissioner. The District Court correctly found that appellants, retailers who own and operate indoor tanning facilities, who collected sales taxes from their customers and remitted them to the state, were not the proper parties to claim a refund of those taxes. The statute governing sales tax refunds, 772708 subsection 2, requires a claim for refund be filed by the person who made the overpayment. In the Anthony Inc. and Governors of Knights of Exarban cases, this court determined the sales tax is paid by the purchaser, not the retailer.
Well, that's true, but are we going to entertain class actions for thousands of people who improperly paid a sales tax to get their money back 10 cents at a time?
Class actions are not authorized under Nebraska law in tax cases, but again...
Well, then, if you had a case where you've got the number of people who went to a particular tanning salon were in the thousands, you'd have thousands of individual claimants?
That's correct. That's what the law requires.
Does it make a difference that this is admissions tax?
It's not an admissions tax. It's a sales tax on admissions. They seem to refer to it as something separate and apart from the sales tax. It's not.
It's a sales tax that's passed on to the user of this.
It's not passed on. It's paid by the purchaser. That's what the statute requires. The retailer must collect a tax from the purchaser. And that's why the court was correct in both the Knights of Exarban case and Anthony Eakin, recognizing that this is a tax that falls on the purchaser. The retailer here is not the taxpayer. The retailer is a tax collector. And if you look at the specific statute that governs the status of the retailer here, it's 773905 subsection 6, says that the retailer acts as the agent for the state, and the taxes collected from the purchasers are a trust fund in the hands of the retailer and are owned by the state as of the time the tax is owing to the retailer.
It doesn't really give the purchaser much of a remedy then to get your refund.
Legally, the person who paid the tax is the one who can recover an overpayment. In this case, that was the purchaser. The purchaser paid the tax. It was collected by the retailer. The retailer is not the taxpayer here. It's a tax collector. Again, they receive a collection fee, and at no time were those taxes that were collected monies owned by the retailer. So in no sense can they be deemed the person who made an overpayment. That's the plain language of the statute.
Does the state or the department get a windfall here if it's unconstitutional and the individual purchasers never get around to making a refund because it's probably chump change to them?
It's not a question of constitutionality. It's really a question of whether this tax was authorized by statute. But in any event, and we don't concede that it was not authorized, in any event, the question is who should get a windfall here? I mean, it's a windfall to the appellants because they never paid this tax. I mean, you would think the person entitled to get a refund of an overpayment is the person who actually made the overpayment. They bore no financial burden.
In other words, if they got the refund, then they really had an obligation to pay it back to their customers.
Well,
because
that
it wasn't
would be
their
the
money,
result,
wasn't their
but
money to begin.
They're asking for the money solely for themselves.
I understand. Yeah.
So I guess the question is, if you view it as a windfall, to me it's just, okay, does the state have to pay money to a company that the companies that in essence didn't pay the tax?
So then could the purchasers bring a class action against the retailer?
I don't know that they would be able to do so. There's nothing. And the reason the Tennessee case that he refers to went that direction is because in Tennessee they have what's called a privilege tax that's assessed on the business based on gross receipts. And most of the cases that the appellants rely on are business privilege taxes, which are akin to the occupation tax in the Anthony Inn case. And that's a tax on the business. So in Tennessee, only the business can claim a refund. And so they said there a purchaser would have to bring an action against the business because only the business could claim a refund. Here it's just the opposite. Only the person who made the overpayment can claim the refund. And that's the purchaser here because the purchaser paid the tax.
You seem to be reading Anthony differently than Mr. Gross. Can you explain that for us?
Clearly in the Anthony case, the court described Nebraska sales tax as a transactional sales tax paid by the purchaser at the time of the retail sale. It contrasted that to the occupation tax in that case, which it found to be a privilege tax levied on the business. And so where legal incidents come in is where does the statute place the burden to pay? Here the burden to pay is on the purchaser. Now what they seem to be saying is we view legal incidents as, well, what happens if we don't collect the tax from the purchaser? Then who pays? Well, it's true that ultimately the retailer could be held liable if
because
they don't
the retailer
collect
the
tax.
Has an obligation to collect.
Right. If they fail to fulfill that obligation and they don't collect the tax, then they could be on the hook. That's really not legal incidents. That's almost like what's the illegal incidence of the tax if we don't follow the law and collect the tax as we're required to do so.
You think Anthony is correctly decided?
No, it's correct, I think.
You think Exarban's correctly decided?
Yes.
And you don't see any conflict between the two?
No, not at all. And I think the difference is, suppose, and this is goes to the question of who's the person who made the overpayment under the tax? Clearly in the case you have before you, where the tax was collected from the purchaser customers, they paid the tax. And the appellants merely collected it and paid it to the state. So they're not the taxpayer. They're not the person who made the overpayment. There's a case that's cited in the briefs, Capital City Telephone versus Department of Revenue. In that case, the retailer did not collect the tax. And the department issued a deficiency assessment because they failed to fulfill their obligation. One of the companies chose to pay the tax rather than just challenge the deficiency and seek a refund. And that's allowed because in that instance, they made the payment. So they're the person who made the overpayment.
In your view, is there any tool available to these entities, the tanning entities?
Other than a refund? If they wanted to challenge the regulation, for example, that required the tax, yes.
Yeah, I mean, they're subject to being collectors, in your
yes.
view. Is that correct?
Right.
Okay. And they collect some money that may later be determined was not required to be collected.
What, yes.
Then what's their role thereafter?
They have no role at that point because they just were the agents of the state in collecting the tax. They didn't pay the tax. The persons who made the overpayment would have a right to seek a refund. They would have no role. Again, I think it's important to remember.
So there's no, I beg your pardon, so there's no sort of mirror image. I mean, sometimes we talk in the tax law, mirror images of activities. There's no mirror image. They collect, and if they collected something later deemed to be not appropriate to collect, they're out of the picture.
That's correct. I mean,
does the fact that they're paid for collecting reaffirm their duty to collect or reinforce their duty to collect the tax?
I think it's meant as compensation for them performing that duty, obviously.
In other words, if they don't do it, they're not going to get paid.
Well, that's true. If there are no taxes collected, there's nothing.
Well, if they only collected half of what they should collect, they're only going to get paid for half that they collect.
They'll get whatever the percentage is of that
right.
amount.
That's
what
correct.
Happens to the fee to be collectors?
Excuse me?
There's a fee to be collectors?
They keep the fee, yes. It's basically for the costs incurred in collecting the tax and remitting it to the department. But again, by statute, none of those tax monies were ever
But there's
owned.
Nothing, you were the fee to be a collector, there's no unwinding associated with that.
I guess I don't quite understand. If they're not collecting, obviously, then there's no fee. Just briefly, we did have a cross appeal that we filed in the Aline Bay case, alleging that the district court should have dismissed for lack of jurisdiction. There was basically one petition for review filed in that case where there were five different claimants that were seeking review of the denial of 15 separate refund claims. We think under the Administrative Procedure Act, which governs appeals of denials of refund claims, combining those with five different claimants and 15 different appeals is not authorized. The person aggrieved must file a petition. There's nothing that authorizes combinations with multiple parties and multiple claims. Individual petitions for review were required. They're each separate refund claims. And as statutes that are waiving the state...
If they're all similar claims, you can't combine them for purposes of appeal? Every purchaser comes in there and brings a claim, and you've got 400 purchasers, you've got 400 separate claims. They all appeal, and they have to bring individual appeals?
Well, if they're each filing their own individual claim, they need to file their own individual petition.
And the court doesn't have discretion to combine all those?
Certainly, for purposes of briefing and argument, they could combine them, but the APA has a jurisdictional requirement that you must file a petition
is there
for
some kind
each
of
denial.
Is there some kind of umbrella corporation involved here?
From my looking at the record, with respect to whether these are all related entities, all I can say is that they have separate tax ID numbers. But beyond that, there's nothing in the record that really discloses the ownership.
But regardless of that, in the second case, JB and Associates, that's not a problem.
No, that's not an issue in that case, Your Honor.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Do we have time for rebuttal?
He has a minute. 56.
A minute and 56 seconds, Mr. Gross.
Thank you, Your Honor. All we are asking is that this court apply the same definition of legal incidents that the United States Supreme Court applies and that this court applied in the Anthony decision. I've been trying to think of an analogy that might apply to this situation, and I think the statute, Your Honor, is like a statutory construction zone, and it's full of a whole lot of different signs, and Mr. Bartel pointed out some of those signs, and as Hellerstein points out, sometimes state tax laws have conflicting signs, but you really need to focus on the fact that there is only one sign that tells legal incidents. And that is the part of the statute that tells who goes to jail, who gets a lien placed on their home, and who gets their property confiscated if they don't pay the tax. That's where legal incidents falls. And in this instance, it very clearly falls on the petitioners.
What's the part of the statute you claim that allows the retailer to sue for the claim for the refund of the taxes?
It says that the person who made the overpayment may submit a claim for refund.
But the retailer didn't make the overpayment, did it?
Under statute, the retailer is the only party legally responsible to pay the tax, Your Honor. No one else is.
But it's the purchaser who actually pays the tax. The retailer simply collects it and is paid for collecting it and then remits that to the state.
That's the fundamental distinction between economic incidents and legal incidents. And legal incidents is who's responsible if the tax doesn't get paid. Very clearly, Your Honor, and indisputably, it's on the retailer here. We go to jail. We get a lien on our house. We get our property confiscated, not the purchaser.
But that's not the claim. The retailer paid the tax.
The retailer did pay the tax, and we're seeking a refund.
Your focus is on the legal incidents of not complying falls on your clients.
Absolutely. And that's
and Mr. Bartel is saying, but the economic incidents of the initial payment falls on the customers.
Right, and the Missouri Supreme Court had this exact issue before it and made that distinction very clearly between economic incidents and legal incidents.
Is that cited in your brief?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
Thank you very much. That concludes arguments for the day. The court is adjourned, and you are excused.